Bonus episode.
All right, gang. So that was season one of Dice in Progress. Thoughts?
I fucking loved it.
It was amazing. On top of the great like situational storytelling and everything, the art that was dropped in chat was really fun, really well done. There were a lot of twists in the actual like story toward the end that was I was genuinely concerned we were gonna lose somebody.
Yeah, I was terrified for Stone's life. Malice I was a little less concerned about, but Stone definitely.
And nobody was really worried about Tatdex. Tatdex had it under control the entire time.
I mean, okay, I have the opinion around TTRPGs. If I die, I die. Like, it's gonna happen. I will miss the character dearly, but, you know, if it happens, it happens. Especially when I'm playing a character like this that is very headstrong and battle rushy. I wrote this character with a very strong intention that there was a good chance that they would do something stupid and kick the bucket, but thankfully it didn't happen, so...
I'm so glad it didn't, because, for one, y'all were fucking bulletproof. My god, landing any amount of damage on you all was nearly impossible.
Upon originally starting, I couldn't seem to hit anything myself. It was the dice. It was... I wound up getting new dice, and things changed, and I was the missing link of the powerhouse.
And also, in the unlikely event that you had died, I would have given you your corresponding village guardian to take over as your new player character.
Yep. Yeah.
That's like a brilliant backup, honestly.
I was going to say, so the Argalome, Total Argalome was Kat's stand-in. Octum was mine, and then Hyali was Marcy's, right? Am I reading that correctly? Okay.
Yes.
I literally adore the introduction of Hyali. That one got me. That was the last thing I was expecting, to be so honest with you.
Oh my god. I had written that like kind of like romantic angle in there and thought I was gonna have to like put in a little bit of work for her to like get you interested in her, but like you were from minute one, and I'm like, oh, this is falling into place perfectly. This is so good. It's exactly what I wanted.
Marcy channeling her inner disaster lesbian.
Yeah, I was gonna say what happened is you put a tall woman in front of Marcy, and then thought it would take her a minute.
No, Baralla is still a little taller.
I was gonna say I'm living proof that's not true.
Canonically, the only character that is taller than Baralla is Toa Argalome.
And I am an absolute unit, and Baralla is amazing. Honestly, I thought I was going to struggle a little bit more with, like, just generalized, like, combat-related things. But I did about as well as I expected, downs and like rising and falling.
Yeah, it was so fun watching you all sort of like grow and get better as the game went on, partially because I kept throwing pips at you left and right because, you know, short campaign, but also just like learning the system and like getting to do like goofy, interesting, fun stuff. And
considering this is also like my very first TTRPG that I played from start to finish with a character of my creation. I didn't just fill in as a stand-in for someone who like left the group or what have you. Like, I definitely understand the attachment that comes with characters, and like definitely getting a feel for your niche and role. It was a really pleasant experience all around.
Yeah, speaking of firsts, for the audience at home, not only have I never DM'd a campaign before in my life, I have never played. This is my first ever experience with TTRPGs.
And absolutely killed it,
yes.
Might I add.
Thank you.
Yeah, could have fooled literally everybody at home.
Right, aww. Like you could, because you're just, it's not just like having a story planned out, it's being able to deal with a bunch of people with literal free will and keeping
things. And really,
things...
it's, sorry, go for it.
No, you're fine, you go ahead.
really, it's the opposite of having a story planned out. That's something I had to learn a long time ago with DMing, is while you can plan story beats as much as you'd like, players are players and will just absolutely fuck with you. And a really good DM will come up with a world with events happening in them and just allow the players to experience those events and make their way to them. But not, you can't like say, this is exactly how this is going to happen. And you pretty much nailed that it was much less of a, we had a course, we agreed to go on it. And we definitely had NPCs that put us on that course, but it very much was, at the end of the day, our decision to experience these events. We could have detoured if we needed, wanted to, and we didn't. But yeah, you nailed the kind of non-Euclidean aspect of DMing, that you can't really write a story, you have to create a world.
Yeah, I will admit, I probably had way more notes for all the stuff that happened in the villages than you think I did, because like, y'all just kind of played in exactly what I wrote, like, a lot, but I did do some improv. Like, one of my favorite moments was the whole schoolhouse thing.
Yay!
That extended so far beyond what I had planned, and it was so fun. I enjoyed that a lot.
Long bread. I was going to say, I love how the schoolhouse is kind of where I wound up coming up with a new part of Malice's character as well.
Oh yeah,
all the downtime at camps was also really where like a lot of the connection that I got to both my character and like my connection to the party as a whole, the dynamic and everything, was like from falling perfectly into the mom role and like making sure that, you know, Malice gets out anxious energy and Tatdax eats, for Christ's sake. Like, it was a very fun like reprieve from action and traveling to just like have fun with the RP side of it and like just really have fun with it.
Yeah.
God, I had such a good time. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I think for me, because I think Mills, I don't know how much you've done, but I think I'm probably one of the more experienced player at the table.
I think you are, because I've never done a full campaign before. I've only done one shots.
I have played multiple campaigns. I actually ran Curse of Strahd to like 99.9% completion before the party imploded, as they do.
Yeah, so, you're definitely have more experience than me.
So I have a lot of experience with particularly D&D, but I've done other systems here and there. Because I've been playing TTRPGs for over 10 years. This has been a weird experience for me, because I usually either play long-form campaigns I intend to play long-form campaigns. That's how I'll word it. They don't always work out, but that's the intention. Or I will throw something together for a one-shot that I have zero attachment to. And so doing something like this that's much more of a middle ground between that I have some time to grow attached to the character and fit myself into them. Because one of the things I kind of always do with role-playing is I will write a character for days, but I don't really find that character for a session or two. It really takes me a little bit to be in their shoes, to really like mold them a little bit more into what I want them to be. And so it was really nice to keep this short, but still have that time to kind of redevelop Tatdax a little bit into really how I wanted to play them. And I'm really curious to eventually go back and listen to the earlier episodes on just kind of that difference there. Because I do think there is a little bit of a difference in the way I play characters over time.
I tell you what, episode one, you didn't even know what they looked like.
Peeking behind the curtain, you did have to record that later.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just, it's a growing experience. And especially also one of the, who knows diddly squat about Bionicle outside of this system, really, especially Gen 2, it was very interesting to get to like learn and grow in that world, is especially playing someone who is a little bit of an outsider to that world. So yeah, it's been entertaining and fun and excited to continue it.
Absolutely. I think we're all really gonna, as time goes on, enjoy the format of the show, because these like MIDI length campaigns, I think, are, it's a wonderful way to like do some like serious like RPing and like you say, get to know the characters without like spending so much time in them that like you kind of lose steam with the campaign.
I do think there are systems that will not work with this format. There are definitely systems out there that are much more intended for either very short sessions, like one-pagers, but also stuff that's very much more designed for a long-form campaign and expects you to play a long-form campaign to get the most out of it. So that's definitely something we should keep in mind as we go forward, but I think a lot of systems will fit very well into this, and we will get a chance to run through a lot of really creative systems by a lot of really creative people that don't get the airtime they really deserve.
Absolutely. And part of the reason I chose this one, it was, you know, huge Bionicle head over here, and shout out to Red Star Games for wonderful games that they've made. I can't give them enough credit for just putting this out there for free. You could just download this book, and part of what appealed to me with it, it was half, it's pretty rules light. Like, it's kind of a long book, but this isn't a very like mechanically crunchy game really. And a lot of the text of the document is like filling in a lot of details in the world of stuff we never got to see in the extremely short reboot. That gave the world a little bit more space to work in, and I tried to fit in as much of that, like, alternate elements and creatures that were only in the art book, and like stuff like that. So I thought that was really cool. But they do have one that's like Dungeons and Dragons level complicated for G1, and like you said, I don't know if that's really like meant for this format. That's a lot more hardcore of a game.
Well, but I think rules-heavy games can work in short bursts. D&D is a great example of it. D&D works very well for short campaigns. And it's kind of some of the versions of it are incredibly rules-heavy. But it's more, what I was talking about is a little bit more stuff around character progression and stuff like that. So, like, a good example of one that I honestly do not think would work in this format is Monster of the Week. It's a system I dearly love so much, but it is very much designed for several semi-long segments that eventually lead into a finale. And so it's very much meant for a 7, 8, 9, 10 session campaign, because you need that time to build up the investigation, or else you're going to get to the end of the investigation with little to no punch. I think it probably could work shorter, but it's really designed for a little bit of a longer stretch. I adore it. It's a great system, but I don't know if it would work here because it's designed around player growth and investigation over time.
Okay, with talking about like just like the general shape of RPGs in general, let's dive a little bit more into like details on this, starting with where'd my notes go? It's on my campaign notes. Let me open that back up.
I'm curious to know if there's anything that we didn't hit.
Yeah, be like the curtain DM.
Okay, yeah, all sorts of stuff. First of
you
all,
you pull back yours, I'll pull back mine.
Okay, we can jump straight into that.
I was gonna say sounded a little bit more euphemistic than I was expecting.
Yeah. The three of you, tell me anything about your like character's backstory that never came up in the show. Now is the time to just lore dump.
All right. Cool. I really need to get this out here. I've been waiting for it. So I completely completely just without thinking about it, name dropped Cedar, which, so fun fact, part of Malice's character was created as I was playing, especially once we hit the schoolhouse and I made the little drawing about the people in the village I running out drawing. Malice with the Toa with the stink lines overhead, and the wolf Malice was with is named is Cedar. Cedar was Malice's original wolf that was killed by Miki while being hunted.
Interesting. And okay.
The idea was, it was like, oh, Malice isn't gonna really, if even if y'all ask, Malice probably won't, like, Malice won't bring it up unless he's like, you know, because it's traumatic for him. It is very traumatic. It is why he is so hellbent on protecting Stone. And honestly, I half expected y'all to kind of, like, at some point maybe mention, like, maybe ask, did you have a wolf before Stone or something like that? And then, like, ask the name, and I was like, maybe not necessarily bring it up immediately, but, like, bring it up definitely, like, later that episode or something like that.
But well, that could have been fine.
Yeah, Cedar is the name of that wolf, and that's why Malice name dropped from that Viet is like character growth. Malice is like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm finally removed from it. I have another wolf who is just as important to me as Cedar was.
Aww,
that's so sweet.
And then, you know, of course, the other thing is Malice's blaster was the idea is that Malice basically just kind of stumbled upon finding that dual element mask in the jungle one day after he had his arm taken off by a monster or by some animal, you know, not too long afterwards, like long enough that he learned how to use a blaster with his offhand, because he couldn't really, his aim was so shit with like the elemental attacks, and he couldn't even hold a blade and swing it properly with the way his arm works, because it's an opposite direction thing and everything like that. So that the blaster was basically a crutch.
Fair enough. All right. With Varella, it's mainly just like from, like, a lot of her upbringing was like the comment she made about living on the outskirts of her village and everything was because like anybody that she had called family had like turned their eye to her because she wasn't a super great hunter, was like excellent at cooking, excellent at actually tracking, but like getting the fresh kill was always like a back and forth problem with how Barella felt like towards the animals that she would have to kill and things of that nature. So she like was like, what's the word I'm looking for here? Banished without actual like confirmation of banishment, was like shunned.
Ostracized.
Because of the fact that that's the, thank you, jeez, oh my gosh, I could not, oh my god, I couldn't place it. For like not being as proficient of a hunter as like the others from the same village.
How about Tat-Tax? Anything going on there that didn't come up?
Honestly, no. And I can really, that's what I'm going to talk about that kind of relates to what I was talking about earlier that surprised me about this and is going to affect how I write my characters for this going forward is one of the things I usually do is I actually come into a lot of campaigns keeping my characters pretty backstory light. I'll make them like a concept, you know, and then just play off of that, and then what comes up comes up. And I usually, over the course of a campaign, will build them this elaborate backstory as we go, because, you know, I just bullshit it as I go. I didn't really have a chance to do that here for two reasons. One being the length, being much shorter, which surprised me. The other much also being Ted Dax's personality. Not really a talker, much more action-y, and so really anything that was about them came up because it was either the concept I had written initially that was pretty open or just some light stuff. Like, for example, when I don't remember the context now, but about basically their secret. Pretty much.
Campfire.
Yeah. They were, they're from a lineage of warriors. They were on this journey to prove themselves because they didn't really have any, they were getting too old and hadn't proved themselves yet. And so that was one of the things they were like, almost starting to bring shame because they hadn't really done anything. But other than that, I really didn't have a whole lot there, and I was just partially because I was going for Meathead, who doesn't have a lot going on up there, and also just because it's not usually my RP style. So it's something that I'm going to have to tweak as we move forward and go into Season 2. I'm trying to be a little bit more intentional about the backstory I'm writing. But yeah, I didn't really have a whole lot there.
Yeah. I want to say on this subject, the scene where with the fire in the Crystal Elder's tent with the vision and all that, that was one of my favorite moments of the whole campaign because back to back to back, each of the three of you dropped like a huge character bombshell on me.
Well, you said that we could make it up out of thin air and you'd like open the floodgates with that one, so.
Meanwhile, yeah, I already had mine.
And it could have been anything. You could have been like, their favorite color is yellow. And I'm like, well, I didn't know that, so it counts. But each of you went like so hard on that one. I love it. I love it.
You asked a bunch of neurodivergent TTRPG players to reveal something about their characters and didn't expect it to be super duper powerful.
Well, I mean, your characters just generally weren't like so keen on opening up about personal stuff, so.
Right, and I definitely feel like with the way the bombshell was like delivered and everything was like a like more or less a good way to clue others in without having to clue in directly.
Yeah.
I just like, for example, my horn, with it being extremely ambiguous as to where I lost said horn, you know, boom, bombshell.
Yeah, it was like I heard that and I'm like, oh shit. There are implications there.
You see what's great is that because Sarah said not even the DM knows, I'm like, oh thank fuck, okay, I can't tell, okay, my big secret is off the table. Cool. Because Sarah knew from the beginning that Malice's mask was a two element mask.
Yeah, that came up in character creation when I was doing that with her one on one.
Yeah.
Oh goodness.
So that's something I was saving for the all the way to the very end.
But, there was a point. There were so many points where I was like, "Could I get away with doing this?" And Sarah's like, "No, if you do this single action, you'll reveal yourself." And I'm like, "Fuck."
Yeah, if you just suddenly use an element that's not your element, and as far as the two of them know, that's not what your mask does, questions will be raised.
Because I noticed earlier on that like. Malice had a thing with really keeping that fucking scarf in place, and so like,
oh yeah,
I thought it was gonna be more along the lines of like a shattered mask from like a certain point down or something, where like it's just not a whole mask anymore. I certainly was not expecting the switch up of oh no, just mixed elements, no biggie.
Yeah, the reason I was like, oh, we'll keep the scarf over it is because the way Sarah drew it is that it was like, what was it, top half water, bottom half jungle, or was it the other way around?
It just kind of combined elements of both. Like, it just looks like the average of the two of them.
Okay, because I know, like, off the bottom it looked a little more jungly to me.
Yeah, it takes elements from both, but, yeah. I wrote a question for me to answer, some of my favorite standout moments that either went exactly as planned or went completely differently or were just improv'd or like stuff that I had planned from like the moment I wrote the outline or like that I just like kind of made up between sessions of like, oh, let me take it in this direction now that I know all this. I know I mentioned Burrell and Hyalis going so well immediately. I'm like, yes, yes, yes. I was hoping it was going to go like this. And it went even better than I was expecting. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, yeah, no, like, I kind of... it just felt like that was the absolute direction it needed to take to give, like, the, like... just to give it that nice twist.
Yeah, I don't remember if I had you do the like the charm roll when you met Hyalise to be like, for what one reason or another. If I remember right, I had read a little bit of a scene of like, if you tried to steal one of those crystals out of the nest and failed the stealth roll to do it without waking Shoko up, that bird would have gone berserk, and Hyalise would have shadow stepped out and like, kind of in a panic, freaking out, like, put herself between you and her elemental creature, pointed the gun straight at you, like, please don't make me shoot, but please don't hurt my bird. And it would have taken a charm roll to come down for that. Barella, you would have gotten a +5 to that charm roll.
Oh my gosh, Casanova over here.
Yeah.
I have a question.
Yes.
So maybe this is just me not remembering things that happened over the last couple months of us recording this. What was the intention of the Skull Warrior we came across and helped?
I had originally written, before you had made your character, I had a, in the, just the brief outline of, here's some, like, fun scenes we can do. I had a thing planned where it was, the two of them were going to be on a team and fight the heroes. And then you're like, I want to play a Skull Warrior. And I'm like, ooh, let me, change this up so we have an excuse to, like, do some Skull Warrior stuff. And, like, you'd get a chance to, like, do your talking in Skull Warrior thing. Once, like, mainly it was just there because I'm like, we have a Skull Warrior on the team, and I want to give you the opportunity to use every single one of your powers, even being bilingual.
Gotcha. Okay.
So I just kind of tweaked that one from, instead of being a 2-on-3 fight, it was going to be like they were fighting and you could intervene in whatever way you saw fit.
To say Tatex is bi in a lot of ways, and apparently lingual is one of them.
Honestly, actually, no. I see Tatex more ace, honestly.
Yeah, I was kind of getting those vibes.
Malice is bisexual, absolutely. 110%. I kind of left it... I kind of try to leave it gender ambiguous as to what gender Miki was.
Mm.
For that reason. But probably closer to either any pronouns or they them pronouns. Like, Miki's probably not binary. Had I been pressed on it, I would have come up with it, but I wasn't pressed on it, so I wasn't worried.
Yeah, it barely ever came up, but that's fine.
I play too many horny characters, so I needed a chance to not play a horny character for once.
Yeah, and you know, this is Bionicle. I didn't want to get into, like, that kind of territory. I'm just, like, a little bit of casual romance for one of the player characters, I think, is enough. And, Barella, you didn't have a lot of, like... You were kind of already the responsible, competent member of the group. I'm like, let's give her some character development in a different direction, and this works perfectly.
Yeah, it honestly did, because, like I said, every encounter that I had with... that Barella had with Hyalise was, like... A chance for Barella to not have to worry and not have to, like, make sure things go to plan and, like...
Yeah.
It gave a nice change of pace.
I like how Malice was trying to egg you on it the whole time. It's just like, one of my favorite things was, you know, especially given a peek behind the curtain, you know, it's dating. So it was kind of nice to just be like, yeah, you crash and burn yet?
Yeah, no, it was definitely a lot of fun and a first for me. So
I was gonna say that was probably a bit more Mel's than Malice in that, but equal parts both, honestly.
yeah.
I'm trying to think what else. There's so many things that I'm like, I wrote this encounter so that it could have gone totally differently. Like when you met Stone at that campfire, if you had just not rolled well, or not tried to feed him, or just decided to, like, fight him off. Like, I had a combat encounter written up. You could have just, like, attacked him and either drove him off or, like... I even got so far as, like, if you'd killed him, there was loot on his body. But...
You really, I was pretty sure it wasn't gonna... Yeah, I was like, the dog?
Yeah, like, if you'd killed the wolf, you would have gotten, like, 3 dull crystals. not really anything worthwhile.
So, quick question.
Yes.
How long were you planning on doing that Uniter thing for Malice?
I came up with the idea literally as you were collapsing that one cave. And I'm like, okay, it kind of came to me in a flash of like, while you all were outside and you're doing this big element thing, and I'm like, have Stone give you a little bit of a bonus. Because I'm like, I pretty much in the moment, like immediately just made up my decision of like, I'm doing this. And so that's why you got that bonus when you collapsed the cave.
I just thought it was because I did the head nod to Stone and Stone did the head nod back because I've trained Stone so well.
Aww. It definitely threw me for a loop. I was completely surprised.
I mean, I wasn't going to say anything. I'm like, yeah, I trained that dog well. The power of animal friendship is not to be scoffed with. The power of human friendship can kill God, but the power of animal friendship can collapse caves.
Yay. But yeah, I was holding on to that for a long time. I'm trying to think what else, like, I was like, oh, it could have gone this way, and it didn't. What else?
Gorilla encounter?
Yeah, oh, yeah, I mean, like, you could have fought the gorilla if you wanted, but, you just managed to be like, shoo! And so it did.
And so it's part of
why episode one's so short.
Episode one's like not even like a little over 40 minutes. Yeah. It's like 42 and a half, I think.
I think you touched on it earlier, but I will be honest. As much fun as it was to play a completely overpowered brick fucking wall with turrets on it, I kind of regret it a little bit. I wish I had gone a little bit lighter on the just absolute fuck you power that Tat Dax had. But on the other hand, it was also balancing out the lack of RP I was going to do with the character. So it's, I wanted to have at least a little utility, but yeah. I do think, honestly, specifically Fear Factor. I wish I had not taken Fear Factor. As funny as it was, I think it was a detriment to just like magically end. One major criticism of the system, it's that skill. I think needs tweaking.
I was gonna say, let's transition into that. That was another question I'd written down. What do the four of us think of this specific game system?
I definitely think it's pretty good. You know, I've not really worked with a lot of game systems outside of the standard, you know, the Wizards D20 system and brief dalliances with White Wolf's what's it called? Bloodlines. Vampire of a Masquerade, thank you. I forgot the name for a second. Outside of like some brief dalliances with that, I really haven't done much of any TTRPGs play system stuff, but I mean it seems pretty solid. I've been slowly looking at more stuff, looking at reading more books like the stuff based on the Powered by the Apocalypse system, and you know, looking at some other like TTRPG mech combat stuff for eventual use in this show. Not giving specifics yet, but and it's like, honestly, it's pretty solid. One of the things I think that lends itself really well to this, and I haven't read the book, so I don't know if this was you tweaking it or not, but the fact that it's not a grid-based movement system, like you see a lot of times with like D&D and things like that, is nice. I do like that. I think that's really good for a podcast show as well.
I think as far as movement goes, the only time they come up with rules is like, there is a range limit on bows and blasters, so like ranged weapons do have a like number attached to them, and I think they go a little bit into like, oh, each round of each individual turn of combat is about 3 seconds real time. And which I kind of let you all do like more stuff than you could theoretically do in 3 seconds, because whatever, and you know,
we're like anime characters.
I feel like if you're not really far away, I feel like it's appropriate that you can just kind of like dash up and hit them. You know, like I don't want to get too pedantic with like how far, like unless you're unreasonably far away, like sure, you can hit them, whatever.
Yeah,
it's fine.
The way I've always looked at stuff like that is those rules exist to help you gauge when stuff is too excessive or like,
yeah,
like affect time lengths. But in general, the rule cool should win. And if it's like, I want to take a couple steps, I always think, well, you know, you're not standing still for the 3 seconds of everyone else's turns. So, you know,
exactly.
you're doing your movement in the lead up to your turn. So,
yeah. I'm like, just don't overthink it. It's pretty good like that.
I like to think I was climbing up Tactax's back during Tactax's turn, then.
Yes, exactly.
That right there, the hammer slam off of Tactax's back was beautiful.
And it turned out to be the diversion for the actual hammer slam.
Yeah!
I love it.
I'll go. Thoughts on the system, especially as someone that has played everything from Wizards D20 to fucking a system that my friend made up where you play by pulling bingo numbers. Not a joke. It's a system he wrote. It's a lot of fun. I like it. I like the system a lot. I think there are a few small things I would tweak. Like I said, fear factor is a big one. I think there's a couple other skills that I saw in the rulebook that I might tweak a little bit. But overall, I think the pip system is fantastic. A great way to handle skills and level up. Because it simplifies the whole experience versus milestone thing. You just hand out pips, you get to use them for whatever the hell you want, and it's nice and simple on that. And overall, it's a very nice rule light system. You can kind of do what you want, play in the space, but there's still enough rules to make things interesting.
Make it a game.
Yeah. Anything else? The one thing, I'm not personally sure how I feel about how combat is designed.
Yeah,
overall, I like it, but I don't know how I feel about prowess and strength being two separate things. Because it becomes do I want to be stronger and do this, or do I want to be able to hit a little bit better? That's one thing I'll give D&D credit for. I really like that system, that it's your attack is based on your strength, or if you have certain weapon types, your dexterity. And that's just, it's those stats. You don't have those two extra combat stats that you kind of lose out on outside combat stuff if you put points into them, like I did, which, I mean, I have a lot. I ended up with 10 pips in combat. But I then also ended up with 2+0s and a -1 in other stats. So really, I had 3+0s because I had logic, charm, will, and aware all at 0, and then logic at -1. I don't personally know how I feel about that. But other than that, overall, it's a great system. I really enjoyed it. I really like how they handled things, and I would play it again.
What do you think, Marcy?
I'll keep mine really short and sweet. I really enjoyed the system overall as a whole, especially coming from someone who doesn't have a lot of experience in TTRPG as a whole. It was a very, very smooth, snappy system to play with. The combat felt really nice. I will agree on the case of, like, some abilities being, you know, a little here and there with their effectiveness and things like that. But overall, I was able to have a really good time with it, and I didn't get confused throughout any of it or anything like that. It was just a really good time.
Yeah. I guess I have a bit of a unique perspective as the GM, because there's a bit more going on behind the scenes than I, like, really, like, brought up. One thing is that for non-player characters in combat, a lot of them use a lot of different types of dice that are not the D12 that we typically use for, like, everything.
Really?
Yeah, like, there's a lot of, especially just the plain old animals will tend to be like, oh, this thing's attack strength is just, like, D4+4, or, like, D8+2, or whatever. So that it's a little tricky to keep up with, like, stats on
that's
that.
That's very interesting when the players are almost exclusively D10.
Yeah, D12, I would absolutely, like, I would absolutely be like, everything's D12s, no exceptions.
I can see it. It's tricky. Because on one hand, yes. On the other hand, do you really want your wolf to roll a D12 and hit 12s round after round when it's supposed to be like a level 1 encounter with new characters? Like, there's definitely a delicate balancing act with that, and I'm not... I think there's probably a better way to balance it, but yeah.
There's got to be like a happy medium here.
Yeah. I mean, I assumed that for me the happy medium would be like using D12 to hit and then using like a D4 for damage or something like that, or a fixed single point of damage if it's a level 1. Like the D12 would be standard for hit.
Honestly, that's one of the biggest things I'd change, is the whole like whether or not you hit and the amount of damage dealt being two completely different things. It makes like figuring out combat a little bit complicated. I don't think it would be too unreasonable to just roll those together.
Oh, kind of like how Battle Sentry G does it, where it's a D10 and then any spillover damage is taken out of your health.
Yeah, because it would still leave you open to the idea of like you could still block or dodge. It's just that the amount of damage coming at you is going to vary depend on if you fail one or the other.
Mm-hmm.
So and there's some tweaking maybe that could go into the stats. Like that shield was powerful as shit. Oh my god!
I think that really may be where my gripe with it lies, is the block versus dodge thing. While it's a cool idea and it works mostly fine, I don't know. It adds a lit, because I don't think the damage is where the complexity is, because there's 100 million systems out there that do it this way, that it's you roll and then you get your damage separate. I think it's that block versus dodge system, because most games don't do it that way. Most are you roll, here's how you hit, and that's kind of it.
The dodge is usually like roped into your armor class, because like you might have a low, like say in like D&D, it's like the armor class number. It kind of encapsulates you dodging instead and or blocking, basically, right?
Yeah. So, and that's kind of also leading back to what I was talking about having strength and prowess be two different things. I think dodge and resistance being two different things is also kind of weird. It's a really interesting idea, and I like that they did it. I just don't know if they really landed it perfectly. I think it adds a little bit too much complexity to that back and forth.
I do absolutely like the whole block dodge is two different options, because it's like, well, blocking is you're going to take more damage always, but it's not as much and it's more consistent, versus like if you're dodging, it's a bit more of a gamble. So I kind of like that, like you're playing a bit of a game when you're avoiding attacks, and like, do you want to take like probably half damage, or do you want to like risk it and maybe not take any at all?
Yeah, but, and I think that's where I'm saying is maybe if they were the same skill and it was the action that was a little separate, so yeah, that way then on your end as the DM, it doesn't really matter. You do the damage you do and it's whatever. But on the player's end, give them that agency to try to roll out of the way or stand there and take it and take a couple points of damage, but make it the same stat so that way it's not two stats you have to juggle in your head.
Yeah, or maybe just dodge by itself is if you want to dodge, and just strength if you want to block.
Yeah, that would be another way to do it. Yeah, agility versus strength kind of thing.
It's like, and you can use whichever one of those two stats you want to avoid the attack. It's just that mechanically they'll work a little different depending on which one you go with. But they're two of your stats that are baked in already.
And I think maybe there's a way they could write it out of the NPCs. I don't know how you would do it. I'm not a game designer at the end of the day. I just have played a stupid amount of games. But it is a lot for the GM to keep track of. Especially when you get into some combat we did, like where we had the bunch of spiders and stuff like that, where you've got 5 to 10 enemies to keep track of. Especially when you're doing Theater of the Mind, which this system very much feels like it's designed for. it's a lot. And maybe there's a way that you could do it differently to kind of help ease that burden of just the players are attacking the monsters and it's whatever. And give the players the agency and the coolness, and maybe larger NPCs the agency and the coolness, but cannon fodder not as much.
That's something I wanted to do with that final boss fight was part of the reason I gave you all like just as much elemental attack as you want is because I really wanted to see those really flavorful attacks, especially with like each of you having access to at least three elements. Oh, that was so much fun. I'm like, all this crazy shit going down. Like, oh yeah, I'm summoning fossils so I can have like bone claws or...
Yeah, and I'm like, yeah, making... Stone was in charge of that one.
Yeah, or like doing the... or like the whirlwind around. That was really cool.
The whirlpool,
like,
yeah. The...
Yeah, like you and all got to do a lot of stuff there at the end. And I'm like...
honestly... Cat, the exploding seeds was something I would have never thought of had you not have said it, and I'm like, oh shit, this is perfect.
I also didn't know that Tat Dax was a friggin' bandicoot and could spin for forever.
Fucking Tasmanian devil ass bullshit.
You know what was something I wasn't expecting? When Kat said that, like, effectively just said that monarchy wasn't an effective system of government.
Y'all know I was referencing Monty Python there, right?
I know you were referencing Monty Python, but it was even better that it, like, it was better that we ran with the fact that it wasn't Kat who said it, but it was Tat Dax.
Oh, I was saying that in character. Oh, yeah. I was making that joke in character.
Okay, good. Because you got the quiet one with, like... personality.
Well, yeah, I love the trope of just the absolute brick brain, like, who has, like, one weird little special interest that they know way too much about, and outside of that, they're the hammer lifter, you know? Yeah. And it's like, yeah, Tat Dax is just really into government.
Yeah. It's just like, I love the
really
just,
into democracy.
Tat Dax could go back to their island and like revolutionize the like instead of just being like I don't know like the tribal village system with like the village chief and whatever going to be like a constitutional republic or something.
Yeah, no, I literally straight up Googled the Monty Python quote. Like I pulled it up as and read it and tweaked it as I was reading it.
That's phenomenal. That is phenomenal.
I just love we turned back. We all turned him out to Tat Dax, including Stone.
Yay!
Just that was a lot of fun.
Okay, here's another question for y'all. If you were to make brand new characters for a brand new campaign from scratch, what do you think you'd do differently this time?
I would definitely do a Toa. Especially now that I've gotten a bit more used to doing elemental attacks and doing those flowery descriptions for them, because, you know, at first with Malice, it was rough. And then, probably a Toa of maybe, like, fire, I'd say?
That could be fun. There's a few elements that... I'm trying to remember the elements that never came up in this campaign. I think it's, like,
fire was
metal and acid or two of them. And there's a third I can't remember.
I definitely think an acid character would have been really cool. I certainly would not have gone with a shield and spear. I probably would have went with something that had better range or a different melee weapon style. Mm. I also would not have picked such a large silhouette of a character. As much as I love everything about Borella, I literally adore her. It just kind of makes a... It makes for way too big of a comedic point. Every time, like, every house we went into, poor thing had to stay bent over looking at the floor in order to not take down the decorations.
I'm just imagining, like, I'm Malice, I can't see you, but I hear you're there, shut the fuck up.
Like, other than that, I was actually very fond of everything about my character. I will say, element-wise, acid would have been a fun one to play with.
Yeah, Malice was an interesting character study for me because I don't normally play emotionally stunted, traumatized people. I usually play happy-go-lucky bards.
Like Sasuke-assed, like, emo boys.
Yeah, I really went from Naruto to Sasuke in terms of
wonderful
character change. Yeah, and it was definitely interesting, and I don't know if I'd do it again if I did this specific system. Definitely like another system, but like I don't know. It was a little tough having to be moody all the time, because I'm like, oh, I'm so happy and jaunty and jokey, and I'm like, no, I can't be that yet. And I eventually was like, I started doing it because, you know, I'm like, Malice is finally lightening up. I can do this now.
The moment you got that wolf, I'm like, oh, this is going great.
Yeah.
I think for me, if I played this again, I would like to get to experience the elemental system, since I really did not. I mean, I ended up with that hammer, but it's not the same. I had a hammer that could sometimes tickle a little extra, you know?
Yeah.
So definitely getting to play Nekoshin or Atoa with those elemental abilities would be something I'd like to do. And, you know, roleplay a little more.
Yeah.
I played kind of a dumb hammer on purpose, partially because I knew several of y'all hadn't really played a lot, so I wanted to kind of, like, step back a bit. That's why I'm excited for the next campaign. But yeah, because this is also very much out of my comfort zone. Like I said earlier, I kind of play a lot of, like, very bardy characters and silly characters, and that's kind of usually what I go for. So playing just kind of, I like to rage and smash, and that's kind of it, is a little weird for me. So I definitely, a little bit more personality, a little bit more, get to flex the rules of the system a little more. Like I said, the one other big thing I do, I really don't like that fear factor skill. If I were to take, well, it might not be as broken on an Nekoshin or someone that just doesn't have +5 to resistance.
Yeah.
That was the problem, is I combined it with such a high block that it was rare that it just didn't trigger. That would need to be either tweaked or something like that. But overall, I really liked it and would like to get to flex the rules a little bit more with the elements and stuff like that.
You know what killed me was 2 out of 3 of you were immune to elemental attacks outright.
That too.
Gosh, like, I think it would be nice to tweak it to, instead of being like entirely invulnerable, you just have like, I don't know, like a strong bonus to resist against elemental attacks.
Yeah.
Like a +4 or +5, but not like,
oh,
impenetrable.
You know what? I'm reading that again. Did we play that wrong?
No, it says in the rulebook, you are immune to elemental attacks.
Does it say immune? Because that's not the text I put in my character sheet.
Pretty sure. Let me pull up the Skelly Warrior.
Okay.
Yeah, you could choose to block incoming elemental attacks.
Now, okay, well, I think we played that wrong.
Oh no.
So, okay, thinking at this from the scale of the system, I never picked up on this because I never read the elemental abilities. Are they normally blockable?
No, they are not. Oh my gosh, we played that wrong.
Fuck. Oh,
so shit. Yeah, it is not immunity. Boy, if there are people who know the system, they've been yelling at us the entire time. Yeah, no, it's not immunity.
So
you can choose to use your resistance against them.
To be fair, I misread Malice's I didn't slip ability.
Oh,
it's fine. Nobody gets it perfect.
Hmm?
Okay.
It's fine. Nobody gets it perfect.
Oh,
yeah. It's fine.
Yeah.
It's fine. Listen.
That's what it is, because that's why Skull Warriors have the ability. Because normally you have to apply your elemental dice to elemental blocking, which is a thing.
Yeah.
Skull Warriors don't have that, so it allows Skull Warriors to not be completely completely vulnerable to elemental attacks. It's specifically saying, even though you do not have the ability to elementally block, you can still block those attacks if you'd like.
Okay, so a tweak to the rule book, maybe make that clarify that just a tiny bit more.
Yeah, and I think the way they clarified it is they used a capital B block, which is like a quote-unquote term in the game. But yeah, I could definitely see how we misread that.
Maybe like, yeah. Honestly, a thing that I think that I'm used to is like all caps or bold terms in books, and that honestly helps a lot. Glitter Hearts did something like that. I've been reading that one lately. I think it was Glitter Hearts has it formatted in pink because the whole text is like pink and black and white.
Nice.
Yeah, it's very nice. It's very like Sailor Moon-esque.
Alright, another question. What was everyone's favorite like funny moments in the campaign?
Long bread. Literally the best part was long bread. There's no question.
I genuinely love that I am responsible for the name of that shop being... I was like, you know, a bread place. It's like, you mean a bakery?
No, I mean the bread place.
The bread place. It's like, yeah, I mean, you know, that's what you call it. Bread place that's based on like a bakery. I called it a bread place again.
Oh my god.
Honestly, it's hard to pick. I mean, I say long bread for the meme of it, and also how like if we ever get t-shirts made from this podcast, long bread will have to, the bread place, home of the world, home of the island famous long bread, will have to be one of them.
Yeah, I don't think I ever gave the physical description of the two bakers because it never came out. I'm like, you can tell them apart because one of them wears yellow and tan and the other one wears tan and yellow.
Oh yeah, very distinct, very different.
I'll have to do art of some of the like lesser character. Am I going to make a pile of all those the guards with the different color armor?
Oh, probably.
Fuck no. No,
that was funny. No, I had no idea. Like that was one of those. I kind of went a little bit like notes and dialogue heavy in the villages, but the encounters that weren't in villages, I'm like, I'm just gonna give them a scenario and no explicit solution on how to solve it, and we'll figure this out on the fly.
I was gonna say, so there was not a solution in mind.
Guard.
Yeah, I had no idea how you're gonna get around that. Like.
You see, I like that Barala said that she's never going to let it down. I think Marcy's never going to let Mel's live it down either.
Nope.
You want... Because who the fuck tries to bribe a guard?
Yeah, hey, okay. D&D.
Yeah, so it's... Well, not only that, you got a character here who's not very socially inept, like, socially skilled, and,
socially
like, kind of
adept is the word you're looking for.
Yeah, and, like, lives off on their own, so, you know...
We didn't have guards where I came from. The animals did that shit for us. And, you know, guess what? You can bribe an animal super fucking easy. Stone knows damn well.
I still think it is extremely hilarious that, like, Borella went to go fix the situation and made it infinitely worse by trying to fix it.
You really fucked it up worse.
It worked out for the best, because the past few times that, like, Borella has had to step in, she has kind of fixed things a little bit, or at the very least made it better. Nah, she full-blown fucked shit up this time. Like... You might have tried to bribe a guard, but I tased the guard, like...
Yeah. Mello said these fuckers will take money. Barala just said ACAB.
For what it's worth, the solution I probably would have gone with is, like, using a bunch of... This may be a little obtuse, but I guess it's the way my brain works. Like, if I had been y'all, probably my first move would have been use, like, a big elemental attack to make, like... Like, just summon out of the ground, like, a big maze or something that you could kind of, like, sneak around and they're, like, stuck in it. And, like, you're, like, I'm like, okay, now it's time to do, like, a sneak thing to, like, navigate through this thing you've made without, like, them catching you.
You just
and
wanted
work
to
your
do
way
a
up
head.
There and then get up there.
You wanted
and you
to
all
do
were like, I'm just going to walk right up to them.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Because you kept stressing the fact that it was an open field, and I'm like, okay, well, my moral compass was literally having a full-blown meltdown because of the fact that I was like, well, on one hand, they're just guards guarding the castle, but on the other hand, are they guarding the bad part of the castle or, like, the law and order side of the castle? And then fucking the worst rock throw I've ever seen in my life, and then we're in it.
I was going to say, as far as I'm concerned, those two things aren't mutually exclusive. The law and order part of the castle, as far as Malice is concerned, is the bad part.
Okay, yeah, so here's the thing about throwing that rock. You have elemental stone powers! You could just make it float over. You know what would have been a real distraction? If, like, a little rock just, like, floated up to them and then floated away. And, like, at least one of them would have probably followed it.
Hey, right. Babe, can I tell you something?
Yes.
I didn't think that the fucking, the final battle would have unlimited elemental stuff.
I mean, that's fair.
Yeah, so I was having to save that stuff, because I figured it'd be, like, at least two or three elemental points to do the big grand reveal.
Yeah.
Which, before wrapping up on that end, like, can we just discuss the fucking bratty ass prince and princess,
when she said she would break us, I don't know if it caught, but I was just going, Mommy?
Well, okay, so fucking, I don't remember us ever being told they were siblings, and so I assumed they were in a relationship, prince and princess, and so then I would, like, later it got said my sister, my brain was just like, wait a second, are we doing that? No. Really doing that?
No, there's no incest in Bionicle. There's no incest in Bionicle. I don't care what anybody else says.
Love is canon, incest is not. Oh God!
I didn't want to bring it up in case it had been mentioned and I just missed it. But no, I completely thought that was like his wife up there we were coming across, and we were gonna have to deal with that fact. Yeah.
I mean, to be fair, that would be a Tat Dax thing, though. Is the thing, like, Tat Dax is kind of the perfect character to ask questions with because you're not assumed to be. Fully there.
Right.
Like, you be like, wait, what's going on when I'm doing my big ass reveal was fucking perfect in character.
I just wanted
this was just
like,
a lot of fun.
I wanted the villains to be like unambiguous, like shitheads that you just hated, so you wouldn't feel bad about like beating the snot out of them.
If you had one kick stone, you would have accomplished that pretty quickly with just a couple breaths.
Oh, she's not going to get her hands dirty, like, touching an animal.
I will say it was very nice, the kids just getting too big for their britches trope of, the princess and prince being, like, the ones who are hungry for power and everything, because then, like, they're young and stupid, but we're old and stupid. So, like, let's see how this turns out.
Sacrifice his fucking dad on an altar to get, like, superpowers.
Right, like, that's super villain shit.
Yeah. I was gonna say, I kind of love that I came up with, because that during, like, where we were just shit-talking the prince that whole time. And, like, it was line of monologue, shit-talk, 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 line of monologue, shit-talk, shit-talk, shit-talk.
He's like, I'm trying to give my evil speech.
blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
I was really hoping that grappling hook would have landed. What would have taken to actually get for me to have knocked the fucking speech out of his hand?
For both siblings, if you wanted to hit them, you would have had to pass a dodge check DC 12.
Oh, damn.
Like, yeah, they're not impossible to grab, but I did not want you to grab them.
I do love that the Vogue, like, I love how the prince called us vulgar and Malice immediately said, fuck off. Like,
yes,
I specifically chose that. And nice. I do genuinely love the line of, we are colossal fuck-ups in our own right, but there's nobody I'd rather fuck shit up with more.
Oh, you get like a team slogan now.
It was so much fun. Just everything. I cannot cannot stress enough how amazing it was.
Aw, that just warms my heart so much that you all have such a good time. I was almost
crying at the end.
Aw, me too. I really was.
Especially
I was
when
so... Go ahead.
Especially when the ship, what's his name? Ship captain?
Faxo, the sailor.
Faxo, okay. The moment that, like, he said that, or no, the moment they mentioned, like, oh yeah, we'll have you go back to the thing. Malice's panic was also Mel's panic as well, because I'm like, oh, I don't want this to be over. Like, that was method acting.
Very much so, like, especially getting the amulet and shit from Hayali, and it's like, oh yeah, you know, you can shadow step an unfuckwithable distance to come back or whatever. I'm just like, I will literally sob. Do I gotta get on the damn boat? Do I gotta?
You could have stayed behind for like a little while. Well, you gotta get a boat to get home regardless, but you could go there with you just zoop on over. I made up that whole amulet stuff on the spot just because I'm like,
that was chef's kiss.
I need a reason that you can magically teleport back there anytime you want.
Yeah, I won't lie. I was actually a little, like, disappointed I didn't have more to do because I didn't, like, have a character bit.
I tried my best to be, like, the whole, like, oh, you're bringing dishonor on your family unless you do this.
I appreciate wrapping that up, but it was just, like, y'all had all these story points, and it was like, yeah, I didn't because I'm pretty sure I've talked more in this hour than I did for the campaign, so...
You really did, yeah.
Truly.
The amount of times we're just like, Tatax, you got... Like, I love how... I think there was a point where I just said, Tatax, you got any quips? No. Okay.
Yeah, and like, that was not me. That was me trying to keep the character in mind, and it's just kind of what I wrote myself into. And yeah, that would be probably my biggest regret is I didn't. But it, oh shit, sorry. I did it on purpose. Like I said, I wanted to give you guys a chance to flex a little bit.
Like I did whatever I could with whatever you gave me at the magic campfire.
I did love that we're literally fighting the final boss and we're all just bickering with each other as we're doing it.
Of course.
Like, we're getting hits in still and we're dodging shit and doing cool ass shit, but we're still just like, fuck you, fuck you.
That boss couldn't land any damn hits. I was rolling like Garbaggio.
Honestly, I didn't.
It was a power friendship.
It was pretty rough.
That being said, you didn't get it even remotely down to like zero health. For reference, when you beat it, it still had 53 points left.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, it had a total of 180 HP.
That's insanity.
I mean, I would have gotten it down in like 4 or 5 rounds. We would have been fine.
Yeah, like, you would have been absolutely... There's no way you were going to take that many hits. It just wasn't doing enough damage because it was like too much like... It was all dice, like, completely random whether or not it hit, completely random how much damage it was doing. I should have had just bigger numbers. That was on me. A bit of the stuff, like, also the element hammer was, it took us a minute to get that balanced well.
Mm-hmm.
I like what we did with it in the end. That was very good pull of you for statting that out, but I'm like, I have no idea what to do with this thing.
So I will be honest, I think we made it a little too powerful. I think I would have stuck with a D4, but I'm happy with the way how it ended up, so.
I mean, it's one of those things where it's
non-element melee damage lower.
Yeah.
Yeah, that too. Maybe knocked it down to like a 7 or 8.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, was like a 7 base damage and then a D6 instead of, because it was 9, right? Was what you had it at, babe?
Yeah,
9 plus D6.
I think an 8 probably. Knock it down a single point, leave it at a D6, because that way you could end up at a 14 or you could end up at a 9. And that gives it a pretty, like, equal range on both ends for the damage of the normal hammer. So it's it's like elemental attacks or the blocking and dodging. It's a coin flip. I can either get my 11 points of damage that's going to be my guarantee, or I can flip a coin with the elemental hammer and either get a ton more damage or maybe equal or maybe way less. So to keep it kind of in that range, you know?
All right, I guess another thing to ask about, what was everyone's favorite, like, character moments that, everybody pick your favorite one.
Character moment.
Like, moments of, you know, those really heartfelt, like, personal growth, like...
Oh, the one-on-ones and things like that.
Yeah, stuff like that, like, not silly and not combat, but, like...
I mean, definitely on the fence with the motherly pep talks between Barella and Malice and the like the one-on-one with Hayala and Barella, to be so honest with you.
Yeah, those are both really good. It's hard to pick for these, but
I feel weird because I know you said not combat, but it technically happened during combat. While running through the cave and Tatdax not leaving the Skull Spider was a major, major character moment for Malice that I really enjoyed, because I'm like sitting there like, oh, well, Mels wouldn't leave Tatdax behind. Malice would have up to this point.
Mm-hmm.
So would Malice still leave Tatdax behind? And I'm just collectively thinking... Stone wouldn't let him. Barella definitely wouldn't let him. And for some reason, Malice doesn't want Tatdax to die now.
Aww. And to be honest, I was kind of playing off that. If you had left me, I would have been okay with that decision. I was fully prepared for that to happen. I don't know how Sarah would have handled it, but...
you would have gotten et by a giant spider.
You say that. I could have won that fight.
Yeah, sure.
Y'all were pretty banged up by fighting the little lava spiders already.
No, I was not.
No,
I
had basically no.
Oh, right. You ate the long bread. That's right.
Yeah, I was healed.
Yeah, Barella, Malice, and Stone were.
I almost regret putting the pips into health that I did, because I never needed them. So I actually took the ability Blind Rage, that when I'm at half my health or less, I get extra strength.
Never happened.
Which,
never
first of all, it. That also needs tweaking, but that should also go into prowess. But, I never used it, because I never went below half health.
Love it.
And like I said before, sorry, go ahead.
Oh yeah,
I min-maxed the hell out of this and ended up with no out-of-character checks because of it, because I was just like,
Did you have any good character moments that you think of?
I liked that moment as well. Like I said, because it was a character moment for me as much as it was let me play off of you play off of me, was the moment of letting the spider go and leaving. Conversation we had after as well.
Malice floundering through that.
Yeah, and like that ended up tying in with the whole thing of like you trying to like prove yourself and all that.
Yep.
Yeah. Like I said it before, but that scene with the campfire is probably my, like, I loved that. I got like goosebumps 3 times in a row when you 3 did that.
Yeah, no, that was overall the highlight.
Yeah.
And then I loved how much you freaked out after I showed you that vision. That was fun.
That was a lot.
Oh, yeah. I've gotten good at playing Malice, having absolute freakouts and anxiety attacks, which is nice. Yeah. Even the moments with, like, Octum and all of us, like, see, hearing Barella drop, like, not Marcy, but specifically Barella drop a fuck for the first time at Octum was beautiful.
Oh, God, Octum's a little shit, and I love them. The three Village Guardians, I love them with all of my heart, because they're, like, the closest things I had to player characters in this campaign, and I love them all.
Yeah.
So much.
Very yeah. much. I adore it.
Which is part of why I wanted all three of them to show up for the finale.
Oh yeah, that was a great moment too.
Literally an actual sigh of relief, because I was like, oh god, this is how it ends, because they keep
coming.
Right, like she's just gonna conjure them forever. And then it was like the fucking Power Rangers pulling up.
I was honestly worried we were gonna have to start killing them. Like, that was my right. worry, was that it was gonna get to, even if we didn't do it on purpose, someone was going to die on accident.
Like, full-blown decapitation level, having to kill them. Like, no chance that the host would survive either.
Yeah, there was, like, I think there's one or two moments where I talked with Mels about this. Quite often, I'd make y'all do checks, even though, like, I'm like, okay, this is DC Zero. You pass no matter what. I'm just making you roll for flavor.
Oh, it's great.
That was the one time I just straight up made you all roll for initiative, even with no intention of actually going into combat.
Legitimately, that is actually a DM thing, like, because you don't want your players to end up in a spot of, oh god, they're making me roll, what the fuck's about to happen? So peppering some of those in helps keep it a little, like, up in the air that, like, okay, this one was easy, we're good to go. Nothing happened. But making it only like tense situations where you have to do checks makes it very much when you make them do a check, it's just like, oh god, and you don't want that.
I was expecting to startle the two of you on the boat at the very, very, very finale when I made you roll that perception check.
Oh, yeah.
For some reason, I thought, like, the fucking boat captain was gonna be, like, fucking...
secret boss.
Turn around, right, like, secret boss type situation. Like, it just... I was worried.
I couldn't do that after wrapping up the story. That would be so awful.
It would be, but you never know.
You say that, I think that could have been a very entertaining fight. Especially if we, like, weren't far enough offshore yet for everyone on shore to see what was happening and react to that.
Malice would have surfed over there.
Yeah, no, exactly. I think that could have been a really interesting, like, secret fight, especially if the princess hadn't been captured because she was into illusion. That could have been a really, really interesting way to play with that.
I like to
think
that...
But overall, yeah, I was completely convinced we were about to go into another fight as well.
Yeah, I was about to just yell, Stone Digivolve.
Oh my god.
I mean, effectively, I just fusion Digivolved with Stone is what I basically did.
But yeah, the uniting, and that's part of why I wanted Hyalias to be a uniter, so that you, like, were familiar with the concept of a uniter before I did that.
Oh.
It was a really good execution.
It very much, like, hit me afterwards. I'm like, oh shit, wait, hang on, we've done this before.
Yeah.
We've seen,
like,
this before.
That was on purpose for people who, like, haven't watched the Netflix show and know that the lore behind 2016...
I feel bad, but I never really used the journey to one item as often as I probably should have.
Well, I think I dropped enough lore for... Yeah, go ahead.
I gotta go pee. I'll be right back. You talk amongst yourselves.
Yes.
Yeah, you're good. I'll probably end up needing to wrap up before too long.
I was gonna do just one more question, then we can call it.
Mm-hmm.
Now that Mel's is back.
Yes.
One final question for you all. What was everyone's... give me maybe not just one, but maybe like... two, like, favorite, like, epic moments in the campaign.
Epics, definitely when Malice brought the cave down. That one was definitely up there.
Oh, I like that, yeah.
Bringing the cave down was... Oh, go for it.
Oh, no, I was just gonna say, are we doing one each and then cycle back, or are we doing two each?
However.
Okay.
I was about to say, I was just keeping mine short and sweet.
Okay. Cat, you go.
Bringing the cave down was definitely one. The other one I would say, if I had to pick one more, was the fight that really sticks in my brain outside of the final boss fight. is the zombie Ekotians.
Oh yeah,
that we ended up having the Guardian turn on us. Yeah, it was a really, really interesting fight.
Their whole personality thing is that they're like to a fault protective, very black and white. Like, does not matter the context. If you hurt an Ekotian, they will hurt you back. And so I kind of wanted to set that situation up of, oh, if you if you just go in and hit any of them, Octum's gonna immediately fuck you up.
And what do you know, you also knew we had the character whose whole OP was I see thing, I hit it.
Exactly. Yeah,
so yeah, right,
that kind of went like, I was like, I was hoping that would happen, and it did, and I was pleased.
I feel bad because both of y'all said bringing the cave down, but I feel like bringing the cave down is probably like one of the most epic things I've ever done in a TTRPG, period.
That was really
good. And that's saying something as somebody who's, you know, got to know vampires and made an entire morgue of corpses start farting.
Yeah, no, I definitely, between the first cave that was brought down and the second cave that was brought down, you know, I didn't realize that we had brought two caves down during the length of this campaign.
Wait, what was the second one? Wait,
the
what was
second
the first one?
The first one was with the spiders.
Okay.
The name escapes me. And then the second one was the village of wheat. Correct, I think it was.
No, you didn't.
No. Glass.
Village of glass was the other cave.
No, that you one undid that cave.
Oh, yeah, we undid the... Okay.
We did the opposite. That being said, yes, you all were explicitly responsible for that cave-in.
Oh, okay, so that was because of Malice. Okay, cool.
Yeah, Malice bringing down the cave topside also made that happen down there, which is why they're like, oh, yeah, just a few hours ago it came down. Lucky no one got hurt, but...
all
our crystals are stuck down there.
Oh, no. But yeah, bringing down the cave was one of my favorite, like, most epic moments. And then I guess, I'm trying to think what, like, my other favorite, like, epic moment would be, but probably Tatdax leaping into the snake pit.
That was really funny.
Still up there,
I
honestly.
Love that.
Yeah, I re-listened to that episode as I was editing it, and I was like, I love this.
I think the best part of it was leaping into the snake pit and then just fucking scaring off half the snakes.
Yeah, you St. Patrick'd that shit.
You literally leaped in, killed one, all the others started trying to attack you and failing and ran away. Like, you basically jumped down, stomped on one, roared, everybody ran away.
Yeah, and that's that's what I was talking about with Fear Factor. Like, was it funny? Sure. It made some great moments. Did it kind of ruin combat? Also, yes.
That being
just
said,
just a little bit.
I went out of my way to, like, kind of make some tweaks to the Fear Factor as we went. Things like some of the bigger enemies, I'm like, okay, well, they're going to avoid attacking you for a few rounds, but they're not going to leave the combat scenario entirely. Or, the one that I liked the best was that last fight with the all the different color guards right outside. Like, you scared off the green one, who then proceeded to run back and, like, it's that one. He's just scared.
That's the fucking terrifying one.
He's got one back to replace them.
I think it was a tie between, my favorite ways to handle it were a tie between that and the coin flip. I think was two good ways to handle it. Making it a coin flip if it would actually make them fear, I think was a very, very good way to fairly handle it.
Yeah, I'm glad I was able to, in that one, do it, like, diegetically.
That was
funny as hell.
Yeah, and I had a list of a few more if you kept making we wait. They would have kept coming.
Just keep naming off random colors until they keep coming.
Which was, like, the reason I just opted to flood the area, because I was like, well, if they're just going to... Because I saw it like a fucking premonition that they were just going to keep coming after one after the other. So I was like, we just got to stop them from calling one and give us time to run.
Yeah, I was, like, planning that. I'm like, oh, if they trigger this combat encounter, they're not going to have a good time.
Yeah, thank you for handling that, because I knew that was going to go poorly.
Yeah, it's how long is it going to take them to figure out they have to run?
Like, Tadax would not have realized that, but thank God you did that, so Tadax had a second to think and not on keep everything. Fighting.
Yeah, I have so many epic moments I have. It's a lot of the stuff in the finale I love. The three guardians showing up. And, you know, I had to keep it to myself, but I was so excited for the Malice Stone Uniter reveal.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. Yeah that would... Oh,
I'm trying not to pick stuff that Malice was a part of, but, like, holy shit.
None of you saw that coming, did you?
Nope.
Hell no.
I didn't even see that coming, and I was Malice.
But, like, in hindsight, like, you kind of get it, you know?
Oh, it makes sense. Yeah, like,
it makes
sense.
Total sense.
Yeah, it started as a random animal encounter, and it turned into, one of the most important characters.
I definitely enjoy the parallel between Hayali and Malice in their animal companions that they are, like, that they combine with.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Moment-wise, also, I actually really liked us coming across the Water Tribe. That was really cool. A nice way to wrap that up, but it was also really... I'm very happy with how the lock breaking went. I thought that was so goddamn funny that I whiffed it and then natural 20'd it after.
Yeah. You basically broke everything but the lock.
It's almost like, you know how, like, when you use a hammer with a nail and you, like, hit it once to make sure you're on top of it and then you twack it in? That's basically what I did with the lock. It was like, hit it once to make sure I was on it and then just snap.
It I'm so glad you finally get everyone... to do something with those rings, too.
Yeah. Right.
You carried about this around the whole time, and every episode they came up, and did you think the payoff was worth it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was like, I need to give them a ridiculous amount of pips to compensate for this whole thing that's been going all campaign long.
With the damn box.
Yeah, the puzzle box that took you half of the entire thing to solve.
Yeah.
I will say, with the unlocking the cells and stuff down in the jail, the part that was funniest to me was everybody taking a turn first, like having to take a turn first, and then Tadak obliterating the fucking lock on the last attempt.
Y'all loosened it up for them.
Yeah, I gunked up the lock, too. Like, I was like, you know what? I can make my gel arm into a blade that cuts people. Why can't I make my gel arm firm enough to work as a key?
Yeah, the problem is you don't...
That one episode of Adventure Time.
The problem is you don't know how locks work. Why would you?
How locks? How the fuck do those work?
Magnets, how do they work?
What the fuck do they work?
Oh, goodness. 10 out of 10.
I had a wonderful time playing this with all of you. This was a truly magical experience, and I am thrilled that we get to keep doing these.
Agreed. Yep.
I am very much looking into season 2, and I'm looking forward to finally getting to run a game for y'all as well. That's going to be an absolute blast.
I'm so nervous about running the next one.
That all being said, I've already started writing, like, season 5. For when it eventually loops back around to me.
I've already got the premise for when it loops back around to me, and I haven't even done my first one yet.
Yeah, I was about to say, I'm still getting things wrapped around for that one. The first one's definitely, with it being new, a little bit daunting.
I mean, like I said, if anyone's scared of, like, diving in the deep end, I just DM'd this with no experience with tabletop games, period.
And actually demolished in the best way.
Yeah, I guess I did pretty good. So I'm
honestly so. Oh, sorry. I was gonna say, honestly, that's why it's like I feel like it's probably best if you pick stuff that you're familiar with to help.
Yeah.
I know the lore well enough, so that it made world building pretty easy.
Yeah.
This is true.
Yeah. DMing is not hard. It's a lot, but it is not exceptionally challenging. And I know I'm probably going to get shit for saying this, but it's not. It's you have to be able to keep track of things. And like I said, the big thing to learn is really learning how to not railroad your players, which is a thing that most people fall into. If you can get that, the rest of it just falls into place, especially when you're playing simpler systems.
That all being said, this campaign was a little bit more railroady than I would do for like something longer, just because I'm like, well,
oh yeah,
we're doing this for the show, and there has to be like a pretty, like we're on a pretty tight timetable. So I'm like, you're going in a straight line and encountering everything in sequence.
And like but I said, how you handle them is up to you. Yes, it was a straight line. I never felt railroaded. We had a goal, but it was always our choice to continue down it, which is a weird but big distinction. It makes a big difference versus you just saying, all right, y'all leave town and go to the next town now. It was very much a, we get to town. What do y'all want to do? We exhaust things to do in town. What do y'all want to do? The village elder said to go here next. All right, I guess we're going here next. Cool.
And so a bunch of shit happens along the way.
Yeah, exactly. So it's very different than rail. While it's on rails to a degree, it wasn't railroady, which makes a big difference. So you, I like guess I said, you regular did very well roady. Yeah. the world was big. It had events that intrigued us enough to keep pulling us down the path, even though it was a single path. You did a very good job with that.
And you know what? You accomplished your mission. You figured out what happened to the Water Village, and you did it in 3 days.
Yeah.
Is that really only 3 days in game? I guess it was.
It sure was. I was very careful to keep track of that.
Was that an initial condition? I don't remember.
Yeah, that was the first thing that the sailor said when he dropped you off. He's like, I'll wait here for 3 days, and if you don't come back,
I'll come get more.
I'll go get somebody else and let them try.
Gotcha. Yeah, I remember that now.
And we all made the joke way back about to episode how we're one, expendable.
He said 3 days. And y'all did it. So you technically accomplished the mission you were sent on, and so much more.
And to be fair, Malice accomplished the secondary mission, which was get fucking lost.
I loved it. I loved everything about it.
I'm so glad. Well, let's go ahead and wrap it up there. Well, for you, those of you listening at home, thank you all so much for joining us on this journey. It has been a blast, and we look forward to returning again with a brand new system and a brand new GM in season 2. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.